But the game is out there. And it's either play or get played.
What's going on, folks? Welcome to EDU Sports. I am Jeff Lail, and I've got Daniel Gray on the line. How you doing, buddy?
Doing good, man. Having a busy week, but glad that it's almost over. Glad we're doing the show again.
You know, it's the best part of the week, in my opinion. But it has been a really strange week in college sports. I don't think that's an understatement. And I was actually a little worried that we were going to have enough content to do the show today. You know, as we will talk about, the news cycle never disappoints. And let me do the intros, and then we will dive in. This is EDU Sports. We are on the Break Drink Network of podcasts. But we talk about college sports and issues and ideas associated with that and try to keep a pace of the headlines and news going on. But you can find our website at edusportstalk.com and follow the conversation on Twitter at the hashtag EDU Sports, and that's always a good and interesting conversation there. Lots of folks posting cool articles and things worth looking at. And find the rest of the Break Drink podcast at breakdrink.com, and there's all sorts of information at both of our websites about how to go ahead and subscribe to the podcast, how to listen to us, and how to get that information delivered towards you as simply as possible. So, with the further ado, let's dive in. So one of the interesting stories to come out this week, and Daniel, I'm not going to lie, this kind of blew my mind, even though there have been some things that sort of hinted that this might be a possibility floating around, but this appears to be nearing official. But the Mountain West and Conference USA will announce a newly named conference as one of is being termed a new association, not a merger of the remaining members. Conference may start as early as 2013-2014 and will have up to 18 to 24 universities, including the current membership of the league. And if you're not up on your Mountain West and Conference USA, which no one blames you, the minimum will be UNLV, New Mexico, Wyoming, Colorado State, Air Force, Hawaii, Southern Miss, Tulsa, Marshall, Rice, UTEP, UAB, Tulane, East Carolina, Nevada, Fresno State, as well as what I'll call the remainder of the Boise State Broncos. And I'm going to go into this Andy Katz article in a little bit once we have a chance to talk about this, but I did want to quote UNLV President Neil Smastrek. That's not right, I don't think. This is an exciting development that will stabilize the current conferences and create the first truly national conference. We'll come back to that comment in a second. With members in five time zones and television viewership from coast to coast, partnership brings together like-minded institutions to improve the integrity and stability of intercollegiate athletics. High-minded words from President Smastrek, which is a very difficult to pronounce last name. But are you buying or selling on the Mountain, we'll call it the Mountain Conference USA?
All right, we've been talking about this for a while, kind of the potential of this maybe happening. I know we brought it up a few months back and look at it then. And I feel, I go back and forth, but I feel like for right now, for how I feel today at 1:04 p.m. Central Time, I am buying this. And the only reason why I am buying it is because I feel like every other conference is going to this massive super conference.
Right.
And this at the very least puts them in the game. Whether or not it may not put them at the exact same table as some of the other conferences are at, but it at least says we've got enough people to bang the door down.
Interesting. I think some of the commentary I've seen on this has been pretty much in line with my thoughts that like, it's very interesting. And I found Neil's comments about the National Conference really fascinating, because in essence, that seems like what they're trying to do is create, I mean, for lack of a better term, the minor league of college sports. And I don't want to go as far as talking about the Little Sisters of the Poor, like the esteemed Bowtie, but I mean, I saw somewhere someone said, I'm not sure how much this moves the needle, and I think that's a pretty accurate sentiment, that I can't imagine this attracting a lot of interest, but the fact that they're meshing it together may attract more than they attracted independently.
Right, I think that's where I see the potential upside. I think independently, both conferences at this point, unfortunately, because they've lost some of their, I guess, better programs, we're probably, I guess, kind of deemed to kind of outsider status, 100% outsider status. And I would say that at least by combining, and really, like I said, I mean, I know we're going to kind of go a little bit later into the national conference idea, but they literally are, I mean, they're touching, like, every time zone. I mean, they're in tons of states. And they're just kind of everywhere. And you feel like just being everywhere, at the very least, gives them some validity, I feel. Some, I guess.
Well, some of the criticism of this has been, so you got Hawaii joining this conference as well. Or, excuse me, Hawaii's leaving. Never mind, sorry.
Hawaii,
I misread something. Go ahead.
Hawaii will still be there as a football member.
Right. This was a specific to basketball article from Andy Katz, and he's speculating on who might be some of these other teams to fill this out, because currently they have 16 football teams slated for 2013, and they're talking about 24. One complaint that he mentioned, though, was that there are only two schools in the Eastern Time Zone, Marshall and East Carolina. Obviously, that hasn't stopped schools like or conferences like the Big East, but I'm going to run down his list of proposed teams. And Daniel, I want you to select the team that the ones that jump out to you.
Okay.
Charlotte, which will actually have a football program by then. I'm not sure how attractive that is. But I'm about to add another caller to the line. All right, Daniel. So we got Charlotte, Florida International, North Texas, UTSA, Louisiana Tech, Middle Tennessee, Western Kentucky, Old Dominion. And keep in mind, some of these schools don't have D1 football programs.
Oh, yeah, well, they got, most of the schools you name don't have D1 programs.
UMass and Temple. So are there any that jump out at you as really improving the conference profiles? Because to me, that's the essence of that Little Sisters of the Poor argument.
Yeah, I would say none of those schools to me are that impressive. I mean, I would say that to me, in terms of reach, I think Temple is probably the best program overall. I mean, you've got a strong basketball program there, so at least you have that going with you. But if we're talking football, I don't really see either any of those schools really saying this is our flagstick, our flagship school that we can stand by and say this is our great program. None of those schools to me represent that in any way, shape.
Well, I wanted to welcome a special guest. Got my buddy LaVon Barnes on the line, who we actually went to college together. LaVon, tell the people hello.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Actually, me and Jeff ran for SGA president against each other.
Yeah. I mean, you know, good times back in the old days. But what we're talking about is right now is the Mountain West Conference USA merger. You have any thoughts on that? Is this moving your needle at all?
Well, I mean, a little bit. I mean, I think all the mergers are obviously about money.
Yeah.
If they're so worried about the money, these other teams, like I coach in SWAC, these small schools.
Yeah.
You know, we have to pay to, you know, play these teams, or, you know, teams have to pay us to go play these teams out there. I think Conference USA and Mountain West, it's so spread out. Like,
yeah.
How do you... You know, you got Tulsa that's in the Conference USA, and then you got Air Force, I think, is in the Mountain West Conference. I mean, like, Colorado and Oklahoma, it's two different. I mean, like, what's the region, you know, the possibility there?
Now,
the fan base is not great in either conference.
I, I agree, and what I was saying right before you jumped online was it's almost like they're trying to create a lower division of the NCAA that might be of interest to television markets. But, I mean, you're talking about one of the things that I saw Andy Cass mention was potentially adding some teams from the WAC as well. And, like, what these are is they're all conferences that don't have BCS AQs right now. And I haven't seen anything about them pushing for that sort of status, but it certainly makes you wonder what, like, for the potential of football, like, where do these teams fall into the football stratosphere? Like, because they have had some, like, BCS qualifiers, but I got to feel like this is pushing to draw in that television revenue and to potentially attract some coast-to-coast interest to their games just because they don't have, like, the necessary clout to attract them in a singular manner. What do you think, guys?
I mean, I definitely agree with that. I think that what you're having is trying to pull whoever you possibly can. It's something that I kind of alluded to earlier, but it's pulling whoever's left to potentially try and get yourself heard. I mean, it's. I don't think it's an ideal situation, but I think they may feel like, you know, they don't have a lot of options outside of doing that. I mean, they're kind of stuck right now, unfortunately.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's a good idea, but it's funny. I ask you, do I buy or sell? Do you buy or sell on it? I actually buy this. I think it's not. It's actually a better idea than just sort of languishing and waiting for the call up. And I think they actually might attract more interest. But, you know, we have talked on this show, and we had that, you know, sort of a joke, the Super Conference draft. And I think we've made claims at points on this show that we thought that some of these top BCS conferences were seriously considering leaving the NCAA. And, like, this is really creating an Eastern and Western division of, you know, a coast-to-coast conference. Really is a league, you know? When you're talking about 24 teams, that's the size of some professional leagues, and I think you can definitely make that argument that that's where this all is heading. So
I mean, like I said, I don't disagree with that. I mean, it's the same. I think the conferences are all kind of building up and taking as many teams as they possibly can. I mean, I think most conferences right now are looking for a 16 team kind of structure. At least I'd say a 12, obviously, and moving. I think they're moving towards 16, and I think this is them maybe being that first. If they pull all the kind of smaller schools together and are able to kind of make that move and maybe if they get to 24 or 30 and say, you know, we don't really need the NCAA, we're going to be structured on our own and do just fine that way. I think
get our television deals independently and, you know, you have a 30-team league that's having a conference tournament. Like, you're really talking about something where you could go several rounds.
Yeah,
well,
that's
hard.
It's hard to get a television deal
if you don't have a fan base that watches the game. If you've noticed, like, sometimes, I think, CBS Sports, College Sports, they'll show Mountain West games, and there's nobody in the stands.
Yeah.
So a lot of teams are, you know, they want to play in these conferences, but you don't have a fan base, you know.
But I think this is so fascinating, though, because what you're talking about is right on the money, but, like, if you're trying to move up in the college sports world, what do you do? You know?
Well, I mean, I look at a team like the University of Houston. You know, I'm real familiar with all the Texas programs, obviously, having been down there, but I see them making the move to the Big East is a bad idea.
Hmm.
You know, they're not even winning their own conference.
Yeah.
You know? So why are you going to go and be a bottom dweller on a Big East? I mean, be a bottom dweller on a Big East conference, and every year you might play, you know, I'm just thinking of football-wise, like, okay, Big East-wise, he's pretty good in football. UConn's pretty good in football in the Big East. You hear about, you know, Louisville. You know, you hear, and you're going to be a bottom dweller. You know, you're going to be a perennial bottom dweller, so how do you recruit that? Well, you know, we're getting beat every game.
Go ahead,
I can speak to that a little bit. I mean, I'm at the University of Houston, and I think it's one of those things where you look and you go, well, what are your other opportunities? You know, we were passed over by the Big 12, and this conference, you know, say, what's that?
They could have got into the Big 12.
They weren't getting to the Big 12. UT doesn't want UH in the Big 12. It was never going to happen. And the thing is, though, is that you sit there and you look at that and you go, okay, well, what can we start to do? What can we start to do? Where can we go that makes sense for us? And you look at the Big East is knocking on your door and saying, guess what? We'll give you an extra $10 million a year just to be a part of our conference. You got to take that move. And at that point, I'll be honest with you, you can pull in different kinds of recruits. I mean, U of H already right now, from the time that they got their announcement of going into the Big East to right now, their basketball recruiting class for next year is in the top 15.
I know all about their recruit. I definitely know all about their recruit class. I know the coaches that recruited those players. And then they're not even winning the conference USA right now. You know,
yeah.
Go to
if
play
the thought of being in the Big East eventually gets you to be to get you those kind of players, then
but they're not even going to pull. They're not the University of Houston is not even going to pull the top players to Texas, regardless of being in the Big East or not.
They don't have to. If they can pull those second tier players in Texas, they can compete in the Big East.
They gotta hire. I know all the coaches on that particular staff. They gotta hire guys that are East Coast guys. You know, you have to hire in order for you to get players. You have to hire guys that have clout in that region. You know, I those guys have a lot of clout per se in the Midwest and in the Southwest. Stuff like that, that's not going to get it done in the Big East when you're going against, you know, you got to go against the Louisville, you got to go against the UConn every single year, day in and day out. It's going to be hard. And first of all, a lot of Texas kids that they don't respect the University of Houston enough to go there. You know, you're talking about every game that you play on the road is on the other side of the country.
Yeah, and I think what you guys are hitting on is exactly the tension that runs in these situations is like, I know where my basketball program is at. Like, I think some of the stuff you're saying, LeBron, is exactly, like, they're very well aware of those things and the challenges inherent. But, like, if it's my opportunity to come up,
you make the move.
Then you make the move, you know, and just hope it works out for you. And, like, as long as it's financially viable in the short run and you can handle it in the short run, you do it on the expectation of what might happen in the future.
That was a football-based decision when they decided to go there. And that
totally.
And definitely the team that they had at the time. Now you look at Chase, it wasn't Chase Keenum, right? That's the quarterback there.
Chase, yeah.
Chase is gone. Their head coach is left to go to Texas A&M. So now you're rebuilding from scratch.
Yep.
You know.
Like I said, people move on when they feel like it's their chance to come up. And I think that's what's so interesting about this is I think clearly these schools in these two conferences believe this is their chance to come up, is to merge and create this, what I'm calling a kind of super conference. And so, like, I'm really curious to see what they're able to do and maneuver that if this works out for them. But anyway, good debate there, guys. Let me see what we were going to move on to next. Oh, I did want to throw this out there about the multi-year scholarships, and that is going to be voted on this week, and I think today is actually the last day of voting. Now, we've already talked about this quite a bit on the show, so I'm not going to go into this too much, but just to give you the numbers, 350 schools and leagues can weigh in. They have to have a 5/8 majority, which means 222 schools. Now, the objection that got this on the ballot, 82 schools expressed objection. So you're talking about 82 minus 350. Your math is looking at 268. So they have to pull 222 probably out of that 268. So a lot more questions there than answers. But the part that I thought was interesting that I had picked up on in this article was apparently the DOJ, the Department of Justice Antitrust Division, has informed the NCAA, and this was 2 years ago, but obviously we weren't doing this podcast 2 years ago, so I wasn't paying attention to stuff like this. They're looking into this single-year restriction and whether it restrains competition among schools for the best players. So is that an antitrust violation that they're only allowed to offer one-year scholarships? And this is a spokeswoman for the DOJ says that they applaud the NCAA board's endorsement of multi-year grants, saying this should expand opportunities and choices for student athletes. And she declined further comment, but the NCAA's Bob Williams says that they are continuing to be in contact with the DOJ on this subject. So, first, I'm curious for LeVon, because Daniel and I talked about this a bunch, so we don't have, I'm sure, much more to say, but do you feel like this is going to pass?
I think it's going to pass, but I think a lot of coaches are going to be they're going to be upset when it's passed. I think it'll probably pass. It sounds good, you know, to do multi-year scholarships and do one-year renewables. Personally, as a coach active in handing out scholarships, I like the one-year and done. I like the one-year renewables.
All right, give me your justification.
The reason for it is, I mean, my job, like every other coach's job that's in higher education, depends on wins and losses.
Yep.
And when you recruit a kid, you know, you see the talent that that kid has and what the potential that he could bring to your program, and then, you know, but you can only do but so much background search and all this stuff before you offer the kid, you know, $60,000, $70,000 scholarship a year to go to your school, and then it winds up coming to your institution and it doesn't pan out. I feel like I should be able to release that kid. You know, I think when you bond yourself for 2 years or 3 years or whatever, how many years it's going to be, you know, now you're a kid that you might really want, you can't offer that scholarship to because you're stuck with a kid that, A, is not really benefiting your program.
So what you're saying is it's partly, from a coach perspective, is an incentive for the player. Is that accurate?
Right. It's an incentive for the player to get the multi-year scholarship.
Well, no, I'm saying, like, so the fact that they have to work and basically perform in order to keep their scholarship is, from a coach perspective, is a way that they're using to motivate the player. Is that accurate?
Absolutely.
Hmm. See, we've talked about this quite a bit, and it's I just don't want to see players put in a situation where they're through no fault of their own that they're out. You know, like an injury or something like that. So, like, I look at this as almost an insurance policy for the player. But I do get what you're saying, that there's some performance incentive that has to be tied in, but and going back to my question, I do think this is going to pass, and I think some of what they mentioned in this article about, like, the 82, well, part of that was a lot of these schools, I think, wanted more say in what was going on. So I don't think that you can unilaterally say that all 82 are not going to vote for this. Daniel?
I agree. I think just because they complain about it doesn't mean they're going to vote for it necessarily. I mean, I think that you complain about things because you feel like maybe something needs to be changed, something needs to be adjusted, but you still may feel that it's something that you agree with. So, what I do, I actually think that it won't pass, and my reason for thinking that it won't pass is I think that a lot of your smaller institutions will do kind of what LeVon said, where the idea that if I can find a player that'll help me better next year, then I'm going to find a player. And same thing with a lot of your big schools. And I think that you're going to have a lot of situations where, we've talked about this for a long time, the NCAA and then the universities are more about winning and about the money than they are about supporting and protecting their players. And this strictly looks at protecting players as opposed to looking at supporting or making more money for the institution. And that's why I don't think it will.
Interesting. So, LeVon, you're saying yes. I'm saying yes. Daniel's saying no. Is that accurate?
I'd say yes.
I think LeVon's having Skype problems. We lost him again. So let's move on to the other big piece of information. By the way, I've got to wonder how much that DOJ thing is going to play into this.
That could be big. I mean, if the DOJ, if the Department of Justice is in there saying you need to do something and kind of pushing them towards it, then I think it will pass. But I think like I said, if every athletic department had their druthers, it would not even come close to passing.
By the way, my 2 cents, Department of Justice. This is not the thing you need to be worrying about. I agree that there is a certain piece of this that there needs to be a more equal bargaining position, and that's really what antitrust law is about. But I would love to see you consider, like, the BCS and the bowl system as well for, like, antitrust. But I like that you're taking on the case of the players and trying to make this a more fair bargaining situation. So I give them a kudos and think they'll probably stick their nose in all this a little more. All right. So our feature story for today was about some of the changes that are going on regarding the NCAA and things they're looking at that we haven't really gone into a tremendous amount. But the whole thing is about that they're trying to slim down the rule book, make it a little more reasonable, and thus provide less material for us to talk about on the show, which is frustrating. But I wanted to go through these proposals, and we'll hit them. You know, some of them will be quicker than others, and let you kind of play buy or, we'll play kind of a buy or sell on this. So let's see. Limiting. This is a little legally or a little strangely written. So give me 1 second to make sure that I get through all this. Basically trying to get away from the 1 year restriction on transfers. Mm-hmm. And this is so weirdly written. So doing away from the limit on transferring and requiring people to play or wait out a year. And this is related to some change they're looking at with regard to academic standards. And I wonder how much this is tied to APR. But basically, my question is, do you think there should be a one-year limit or one year?
I'm actually fine with the one-year limit. I think it leads to people potentially not transferring as much. I think it's still a little bit of a weird rule, but I like the idea of saying that if you want to leave the institution that you chose to be at, you do need to wait out a year, though. I guess I would sell that. I would sell that one.
Yeah, I actually agree with that. I think part of, you know, one thing that we seem to be pretty regularly on this show, which is no surprise, is very pro player. And I think if you're going to do things like offer multi-year scholarships and start talking about like possibly more compensation and really things to protect the athlete more, there need to be some things in place to protect the school from players just bouncing when they've invested a tremendous amount in them. So I actually don't have a problem with the one-year restriction. All right. Two, there is currently a ban on academic or athletic dorms that was 1991, and that was completed by 1996. NCAA wants to eliminate these restrictions and require schools to establish their own policies on housing athletes. And basically that means they're talking about deregulating the whole thing and just saying, you know, whatever you want to do is fine. Now, I find that really interesting in the context of, you know, student affairs. We talk about living learning communities pretty regularly. Mm-hmm. So what do you think about that?
I'm going to buy that one. I guess going back into the research I'll do on living learning communities and I guess kind of all that, I think that it could hopefully potentially create some help towards helping these students actually graduate. I know that if we have people who are all kind of engaged and supportive of the same, I guess, overarching goal, it usually leads to better persistence and graduation rates. So I'm actually fine with that. The only thing that I don't like about it is the idea that, and it already happens anyways, but it is your average everyday student then getting kicked to the side because all these players are in the same place. That's my only I guess caveat to that.
Yeah, I support this wholeheartedly. Think about the context of like that these players are will be all living in the same place. I think that is abundantly positive. Obviously, there are questions. There are questions with every resident situation that college students get involved in. But I like this idea. Let's see, recruiting rules. Group wants to let coaches talk publicly about unsigned recruits, either through the recruiting process or once the player is committed. Current rules prevent publicizing interest in a recruit, stem from a desire to keep to minimize a keep up with the Joneses mentality and avoid schools getting an edge.
I'll sell that one. I think certain institutions have much better access to media than other institutions do.
Yeah.
USC has an insane amount of access towards student athletes that San Diego State may not, and I think that definitely creates an unfair recruiting advantage.
Yeah, and I sell it for a more practical reason. I really just don't want to hear about, like, every time we interview Lane Kiffin to have him talking about recruits. Like, I just, the less we can keep that off the radar as far as, like, national media exposure, I'm fine with these guys speculating on who's going where. That's great. I don't need to hear about it from the coaches, and I don't want, like, every press conference to be a sales pitch to, you know, fill in random player X. No thanks. Technology and social media, this is part of the reason that they're looking at that, though, is social media is hard to regulate, and it says it may be necessary to still ban media presence during recruiting contacts and visits. But yeah, I know we've had some stories about people getting caught up with social media, use it inappropriately for these kinds of things, but I don't think we need to deregulate that.
Yeah, I
would rather see people slapped on the wrist for this than to take it out, take the rules out. Restrictions against third-party individuals involved in the recruiting process who get hired by schools for non-coaching jobs, that should be a violation. What do you think?
I'd agree with that. I mean, I would definitely spell that. I mean, although I do have guys like our boy Willie Lyles all over the place, and you have that kind of third-party person profiteering off these student-athletes, which is not what we're looking to have happen.
Yeah, and it's just not a good situation. We have a caller. Who's on the line?
Hey, it's Elwood from Indiana.
Elwood, what's going on, man?
We were talking about this today. Here's what we don't get. We think that, well, here's what me and my buddies talking about this. We think when you're going to a school, this is not a business. This is not a profession. This is you playing at a college. We can't figure out how it's even ethical or legal for them to start talking about who wants to go to school there before they've signed on the dotted line.
I totally agree.
I might not want everybody on the planet to know where I go to school. And to be honest, it's not the school's place to be saying I'm interested in attending there, whether I'm an athlete or a bookworm or anything.
Yep.
And we can't figure out from the aspect why that's even legal. I mean, once you sign on the dotted line, then yes, the school can use your name and stuff. That's part of your scholarship. And that one-year deal you were talking about earlier, that made us mad because a lot of us went to Christian colleges. And
yep.
we got peanuts in scholarships.
Yep.
Peanuts. When I played baseball for a Christian college, it only covered about 10 to 20% of my scholarship. I should not have any restrictions on me leaving because the amount of money they gave me was minuscule. These guys getting a free ride who've made a commitment to the school should have that. But people who are getting like 10 or 20% should be free. That should be based on how much the school's giving you. It's like if a job pays for your college, you have to stay at that job for so long if they pay for your school. It should be like that, you know, kind of like a basis, because if you didn't pay any money, like there are some sports where you might not get a dime, you shouldn't have any restrictions on you. You should be able to leave tomorrow if you want. So a lot of the stuff, I think the athletes, I think their privacy is being invaded, and a lot of times I think they're being unfairly restricted. And the dorm part you were talking about earlier,
yeah,
where I went to school, and this was a Christian college, more or less all the guys had a certain dorm they were in. And at the cafeteria, there was a certain section you sat in, and the building for sports had a special place for you. These places already got that in place. So I think making it public would just cause resentment, kind of the free enterprise system. Just kick back. It happens anyways. You know, there was a certain section where the baseball team ate in the cafeteria, and by golly, nobody went near it unless you were on the team. I mean, it just happens naturally. I think if they come out and say, this is the dorm for the football players, they better make sure it looks identical to everyone else's dorm or a little bit worse.
That's an excellent point.
Yeah.
It's frustrating when you talk, because I was a student athlete, but I went to a Christian school. And then I went to a state school afterwards, but it was it was IUPUI, so obviously that it's almost considered, the athletic program there is considered a joke. It all goes to IU and Purdue. You know, even though we can go to NCAA, we're still a joke.
That happens.
I think we were in the brackets was amazing. No one even knew we had a basketball team. That was a fun year. But yeah, I just wanted to chime in on that because I think it's wrong on the ethical level. You know, it's just, I don't know.
Basketball, I think that is a really interesting.
You know what I think the problem is, too, before I hang up?
Yeah.
Remember when you and I were kids, you might go to the local big box store, you know, Walmart, Target, whatever. They might have a college T-shirt, maybe a college hat. That's it. Maybe.
Right.
Now, when I go to the store here, there's a whole row for Butler, a whole row for IU, a whole row for Purdue, and a whole row for Notre Dame. It's big business. And when you go to these games, you go to, like, ticket places, and college sports has become big business, and I think that's what's changed the whole nature of the game. 20 years ago, it wasn't big business. You know, you might
be the money team right now. We are over here.
Sorry. You were nailing that. I had to do the Ray J.
Oh, I like it. Oh, good Ray J. But no, I just think that's what's happening. College is big business, guys. Big business. I mean, cozies, the hats, the clipboards, the magnets. It's almost like the pro.
Definitely.
You could almost do a whole room in any college you want. I mean, you know. And now that we've got a fourth sheriff in town in this state, it's even worse. Because I'm always razzing you about Butler, but it's become a major powerhouse. But I always knew that would happen in Indianapolis because the other three schools are so far away. I always said if one of the four colleges in Indianapolis ever got big, it would be a monster just because people don't like schools that are far away. It did. Okay, guys, I'm going to hang up. Try working with Butler in. I want him to go back to NCAA.
Not going to happen this year.
I know, but I loved it 2 years in a row. Oh, that was mad. And
two
one
years in a row in the finals. Let's
a
not
hometown
get
NCAA. The city mailed off the fortune, but it was fun.
Yeah, man. Thanks for the call, man.
Okay.
Elwood brings up an excellent point there, though. They cannot, if they're going to do this residence hall for athletes, it cannot be like the nice residence hall. gotta make this fair and equal. But like I said, I was thinking in terms of living, learning community and academic support that could be a little more centralized in that kind of location. I think there'd be a lot of positives there.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Eliminate restrictions on the number of off-campus recruiters at one time. What do you think?
I guess I'm reading the article too, and it says that they found no evidence that it's worked or that it's even, and they said it's hard to enforce. If it's something that they don't know if it works, and if it costs significant amount of money to even try and enforce it, then I think you have to kind of buy it at that point and buy it by eliminating it at that point. That's how I feel. I mean, it's hard to say, but maybe that's what you do in that situation.
I mean, I'm having a little bit of a hard time understanding exactly what this means. Like, off-campus recruiters, what are we talking about? Like, how many people can be, like, at other places recruiting at one time?
I think so, yeah. I think, because you're limited to how many people you can actually send to whatever institutions that you have, or however many institutions that you were trying to recruit students from. And I think that's what this is regards to. So I think you're only limited to have a certain amount at a certain time or a certain amount at a certain place even.
Yeah, I have a hard time. I mean, I know what they're trying to do there is, like, again, it's all about the competitive advantage. But, I mean, I don't know. I have a hard time making a big deal about that if they feel that it's going to be deregulated. And, like, I think this is the kicker. No evidence that it has worked and said it's hard to enforce, so they're just going to eliminate the rule and just not worry about it.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Give the schools more freedom to govern what happens on official visits. Eliminate rules once put in place to address isolated cases of perceived recruiting advantage. So what I think they're addressing here is that this is ballooned to try and deal with specifics, but, like, how can you govern it that tightly?
Yeah, I think it's hard to govern what's going to happen on every campus. Every day that there's a recruit on that campus. I think it's close to impossible to try and to govern that in a way that's efficient in any way.
Yeah, I don't have any problem with that whatsoever. Eliminate rules on how to scout opponents since video is now widespread. The Division I Legislative Council still prohibits live scouting in all sports except for same site competition games. I mean, yeah, that to me is a technological rule that they're trying to fix, and I don't have any problem with that. What do you think?
I feel the same way. It sounds like just technology has passed them by, and the rules were never updated, so yeah, I'm good.
Yeah, like, they don't need to go to the campus, basically, because they've already got access to all that information. All right. No longer requiring coaches to become annually certified on NCAA rules. Schools will be responsible for educating coaches about recruiting rules.
That one I sell, because I think it's important that coaches become certified, and I think that requiring the schools to do it, there are different ideas as to what constitutes legal and illegal on every campus, I'm certain. And I think allowing that kind of wiggle room will give institutions the potential to look at potentially, I don't say cheating, but trying to be subversive in some way. So,
I actually hate this idea. Why would the NCAA not be in charge of doing certification for coaches? I don't understand that. Like, I have a really hard time understanding the logic behind this.
I don't get it either.
So we're both selling on that. Let schools have earlier access to recruits in all sports starting June 15th after the recruit's sophomore year of high school. This is ideas for recruits and schools to make more informed decisions. Thoughts?
I guess I don't like the idea of recruiting sophomores in high school. And only because I just don't like the idea of having grown men chasing after 14-year-old kids who are playing basketball games. That's my only real reason. It's not, there's nothing I would say, there's no real, I guess, logic behind that or real legitimate reason. It's just the idea of having that happen. It's something I feel like let those students have just a little bit more time to be kids. As opposed to forcing them to try and choose a university after their sophomore year.
Yeah. Now, if I'm correct here, you can do a verbal commitment and a national letter of intent. And I don't think you can sign a national letter of intent until like the summer before your senior year. Does that sound right to you?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
So what they're allowing is
as early as you want.
Go ahead. Sorry.
You can verbal as early as you want, but you can't actually sign a letter of intent until right around your senior year begins.
Well, what we talked about was that they should do away with the idea of a verbal commitment because it's not binding, it doesn't do anything.
It doesn't mean anything else?
Does not mean a thing, and is a complete waste of time, and it should be obliterated from the rule book because it doesn't. What my understanding would be is that a verbal is. It's supposed to get people to stop recruiting you, and it just doesn't. LaVon, I'm curious for your perspective on this. You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Let me read this to you, and I want your perspective on it. Let schools, this is a proposed change, let schools have earlier access to recruits in all sports starting June 15th after the recruit's sophomore year of high school. Ideas for recruits and schools to make more informed decisions.
I agree. I don't think there should be restrictions on recruiting. It eliminate a lot of the backside deals that go on.
Yeah, I think the more we can get rid of that, that's positive. But here's my question. We were just talking about this when you came on. Do you think the verbal commitment system has any place in the college sports system?
I couldn't hear that last part.
Do you think that schools and, well, the athletes need to be allowed to make verbal commitments?
I still like the verbal commitment.
Okay, what's your justification for liking it? Because technically, it doesn't stop other schools from recruiting
really,
guys.
You're right. I heard you. It doesn't really mean anything. But at the same time, you know, you as a coach, you want to see the fruits of your hard labor. If you're able to recruit a kid, and you've been on a kid, and you've got to know that kid's family, and that kid wants to make a verbal commitment to you. You know, I think that's the good old American way.
All right, I got a question. Here's my guess on how a coach might feel about this verbal thing. Now, you talked about your contract is year to year. You can be fired at any time. Now, you're all about winning. So let's say you are having a down season or a season that's not up to expectations. What I can do is say I've had verbal commitments from these guys. And what you're essentially able to sell to your employer or your fan base is, this is hope. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It looks good.
Exactly.
It looks good. Most times when a kid's verbal, he's going to attend.
Yeah.
He's going to go to school.
What would you say
that doesn't happen.
What would you say is your guess on the percentage of people who verbal who don't actually come?
That don't actually come.
Yeah,
I'd say less than 5%. I might even be giving that more than what it is. And I would say 3%. I think when a kid verbals, unless a coach gets fired, or you know the coach that recruited him gets fired or gets another job, or some unforeseen circumstance, then the kid usually is going to go to the school. You know, from my experience, when we've had kids verbal, you know, we've stayed on in contact with them throughout the whole entire period until we faxed over that letter of intent, you know. And everything seems to be on the up and up. Now, where you come into the gray area is if you get a verbal from a kid who's a sophomore, or the ridiculous thing where, you know, I think Baylor had an eighth grade verbal.
Yeah.
You know, that's when you go into the whole ridiculousness of, you know, verbal agreements. Like, how are you in eighth grade? First of all, you know, yeah, kids, you have to base everything on potential.
Yeah.
Scholarship comes on potential. What do you think this kid can do? There's a few Austin Rivers and, you know, those types of guys floating around in the country. You know, guys that are big time, that have big time names, they don't pan out either.
Yeah.
And so when you're an eighth grader and you verbal to wherever you're going to verbal to, Baylor or Duke or whatever, you know, that coach is saying, okay, in the next 5 years, you're going to be the man.
Yeah.
A lot can happen in 5 years.
Absolutely. And like I said, I think I'm not using this as an original, but I've heard people talk about the reason people love National Signing Day and things like that is that it's essentially selling hope.
Yeah.
And people love hope. But anyway, let's get through the rest of these because we're running out of time here. Remove restrictions on what schools, conferences, and the NCAA can provide for team entertainment, such as professional sports tickets and movie tickets. Buy or sell?
I buy it.
Me too. What do you think, Daniel?
I guess I'm still reading it over and trying to nail it down. So remove all the restrictions of what schools, conferences, NBA, or NCAA can provide for team entertainment. So at this point, they'll be able to start going to, if you're a team in LA, you can go to a Lakers game. Or you can go, or if you're a team in Houston, you can go to a Texans game if you're a football player. Is that what it sounds like to me? Is that what it sounds like to you guys?
Yeah, I like it. If you know, let's look at Duke. Duke is my favorite team, college basketball wise. How many guys are in the NBA? They have the most guys in the NBA coming out of that program.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're alumni that get back to the university. You know, they pump money in there. Why can't, you know, those guys go see, you know, Gerald Henderson play at Charlotte? Why can't? I mean, what's the big deal?
But does that create an unfair advantage, though? I mean, granted, like, Duke has been better, but does that still create an unfair advantage, though?
It's already an unfair advantage. So you might as well take it away.
You're right that it is.
It's already. Look, I mean, first of all, there are schools that have that type of money.
Yeah.
I know coaching at a small, at HBCU, you know, Division I school, there's no way that I can compete against Kentucky. You know, a chance. It's impossible. So the advantage is already there. Kentucky got private planes. They can fly guys out.
Yeah.
So you want to be taken out of the game completely then at that point and only be limited to what you can do as opposed to maybe having a potential at getting a player that may show up at your, let's not say HBC, but let's say a Texas Tech. So at this point, what you're saying is that we're going to limit the amount of times that you can have school. To me, that this limits the potential for your Boise State. It limits the potential.
You there, Daniel?
Pulling in more big players.
Here's my question. I look at this as deregulating this more than removing restrictions, because I think a lot of this stuff's happening under the table.
It does.
And so, like, if it's out in the open and people are able to know about it rather than it being some kind of secret thing, then it's a little easier to address if, like, you know, things are being ridiculous.
Right. I think some of the rules the NCAA has is absolutely ridiculous. And it's not up to date. It's not current. With
yeah.
the way multimedia is, with, you know, with the way technology is, it's so far behind, and they don't have the resources and nor the manpower to control everything that's going on. So they might as well deregulate a lot of stuff that already goes on.
All right. Two more, and then we're going to do who's bad and call it a day. Give schools greater discretion to provide financial relief to family members of an athlete who are sick or injured. Bylaws would remove the reference to life-threatening. So they're already allowed to do this in the context that it's life-threatening. but basically would remove some of that restriction and make things a little easier for schools to help out athletes. I'm buying this 100%.
Yeah, 100% buy on my side too.
Absolutely.
All right, last one. There's even a suggestion to let schools provide unlimited food to athletes. And this is sort of going back to the bagel spreads joke that we were making months ago. But you guys buying or selling that?
Buying.
Buy.
Me
buy.
Too.
Buy.
Awesome. All right. Let's go to everybody's favorite part of the show. All right. You want to start with the scalping tickets or the craziness at TCU?
Let's do the scalping first, and then we'll finish up with TCU.
All right, St. John's administrator fired for scalping basketball tickets. One source told the New York Post the amount of money involved was not significant, while another said it was around $80,000. And this was game against Duke and as well as the Big East tournament. So what do you guys think about that?
Go ahead, Daniel.
I just love the idea that he's selling tickets to his team's games, but not. I doubt he's selling the games that they're playing against Providence. I'm sure it's against the games, like I said, obviously Duke, your Syracuse, your UConn. I just think it's hilarious. I mean, to me, this kind of stuff happens all the time, but only so often does it get called out like this, though.
Right. It happens. It happens so regularly that, I mean, it's like not even worth commenting on. Every coach pretty much sells their tickets if it's a big game, per se. I mean, I'm the type of guy, I rock the boat a little bit, but, you know, every coach does it. Final Four, especially, they'll do it.
Yeah, I think the I remember some story we were talking about with, I believe it was regard to Ohio State and a guy, like, getting a car in exchange for tickets. And, like, I always look at this is perks of our job. It's not our tickets necessarily, but it's like we're allowed to have tickets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so that's the problem with this to me is, like, it's not a way for him to garner additional compensation. That is the compensation.
Yeah.
So maybe I'm wrong on that, but that's sort of my perspective on it. But, like, I think giving away the tickets is a totally different thing than him selling them. And especially scalping, which, LaVon, you may know more about this, but, like, is there a law against scalping in New York City?
If there is one,
I was going to say, I swear I remember seeing guys sell tickets outside MSG.
as long as you're not selling fake tickets. Like, you're not selling fake tickets in your fine. I mean, shopping goes on a regular outside of Madison Square Garden right now. Right now, as you speak, somebody's scalping tickets for the game against, I think they're playing the Mavs this weekend. It's just going to happen. You know, that's what it is.
Pretty interesting situation. And I think the problem they have, and this is according to the university plans to press charges against them because the amount of money involved in the scandal was not significant enough for that. So I think they've got some. I think it's just kind of something they don't want their athletic department tied to more than anything else.
Right, but it'll blow over.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like this one's not going to be an issue for long.
Yeah. So the other exciting story this week. Four TCU football players, including standout linebacker Tanner Brock, are among 19 students arrested following a six-month drug investigation. Two people were arrested last week, 17 on Wednesday. And four players arrested, going down through some. All those arrested are drug dealers, according to TCU Police Chief Stephen McGee. I want to repeat that. All those, including four of the football players, are drug dealers. Let's see. In the arrest warrant affidavit for Brock, he told an undercover police officer that the team was drug tested on National Signing Day. In the affidavit, Brock said there would be, quote, about 60 people being screwed because of the test. according to the Star-Telegram, TCU coach Gary Patterson ordered a surprise drug test for his team after a high school recruit told Patterson that he wouldn't attend TCU because of drug use by his players. Johnson told undercover officers that 82 players had failed the drug test. Now, quickly, how many scholarships?
85.
85. So 82 out of 85 players failed the drug test. Wow.
Doesn't surprise me.
And this is from Gary Patterson. There are days people want to be a head football coach, but today is not one of those days. As I heard the news this morning, I was first shocked, then hurt, now I'm mad. Under my watch, drugs and drug use by TCU student-athletes will not be tolerated by me or any member of the coaching staff. Our program is respected nationally for strong ethics and for the reason players arrested today were separated from TCU by the university. I believe strongly that young people's lives are more important than wins and losses. What do you think about this, guys?
Hey, Daniel.
This whole situation is just a little bit of a mess. I mean, I guess if we look at it kind of, I guess kind of comically, you can sit there and say, well, if you were paying players, you wouldn't have to do this anyways. But I think the whole situation is just, it's kind of crazy. I mean, but I think that the fact that these TCU players got caught, I doubt that they're the only players across the country doing stuff like this. And that, I guess that's the thing, that it just so happened that they got caught. They were a little stupid, I guess it seems like. And they got in trouble. I mean, players are doing whatever they can to make money. I mean, we saw it with Pryor last year. Players are going to do everything they can to try and make money however they possibly can. And this just happened to be their way. We're a little more legal than most, but it just happened to be their way, though.
I mean, just to piggyback on that, I think it always comes back to what you talked about earlier. Thank God the one-year scholarship was cool.
That's a fair point. I think if you're going to do the one multi-year scholarship, there have to be some outs like this.
Well, those are outs.
This is grounds for termination.
It's always going to be an out anyway. Anything kind of detriment to the team is always going to be an out regardless of 1 year.
Yeah.
Pool.
Yep.
But for that coach to say, I didn't know if that was going on, he's lying to himself. Because every coach knows that there's drug use going on in their program, and they know exactly who's doing it.
Yep.
But again, your job as a football coach or as a basketball coach, it's not to necessarily culture and groom these men, young men to be men. Your job is to win games. And so if your best player is smoking weed, but he's at the same time he's giving you, you know, 19 and a half sacks every year, then you're not going to say it. You're just going to let that thing pass. That's the coaching aspect. When you're talking, that's big money coaching. That coach can pay millions of dollars.
Yep, so, and you are nailing this to the wall. Keep going.
I mean, every coach in America knows there's drug use going on in that program. I'm not going to sit here and say that there's not drug use going on in my program because I'm not dumb enough to say that. The thing is, you got to be smart. You got to tell your players, you got to be smart. You know, and know when and where and who to be around. Because when you're an athlete, your target is already on your back. People don't like you because you're an athlete, because you go to school for free, because you get all this Nike gear, because you're on TV. So people are already looking to jump on you for the smallest little thing, whether it's academic or it's, you know, famous, you know, because jealousy just is rampant in college sports and sports in general.
Well, it's a pretty amazing situation. I wanted to point out two other things, and then we'll call it a day. This is according to the affidavit. Drug dealing was rampant throughout TCU. The alleged drug deals occurred in a variety of locations. In one instance, Yendry, who was one of the people kicked off the football team and expelled, arranged a sale with an undercover officer, taking him to a Kroger parking lot to a residence where he met Brock. Brock sold the officer marijuana for $200. And here's the kicker. Just last year, Sports Illustrated published an article that distinguished TCU as the only top 25 program with no players on its roster with a criminal record.
So,
there's the other shoe dropping.
End your delusion. But this has been EDU Sports. We're on every week on here, and you can find us at edusportstalk.com as well as breakdrink.com. We are in the iTunes Store, Stitcher Radio, like generally anywhere you can listen to podcasts, you can find this podcast. Please leave your comments on Twitter at the hashtag EDUSports and follow the account that we have created on Twitter. It's at EDUSportsTalk, same name as the blog. And we are tweeting out articles and all kinds of stuff all throughout the day or all week. And thanks to LaVon for coming on. You provided a great perspective. Really interesting to hear your comments coming from a very different angle from Daniel and I. And Daniel, as always, thank you for being on. LaVon, you want to shout out your Twitter?
Yeah, man. You can hit me at Original L Boogie. The Original L Boogie. That's Twitter. That's two L's.
And Daniel is at DJGray1, and I am at Jeff Lail, J-E-F-F-L-A-I-L. And thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.